Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Sarah Goodall. Sarah is a CEO, founder, entrepreneur in residence at Portsmouth University in the UK, co-author of The Social CEO, and a permanent member of the Forbes Business Council. Sarah discovered her love of social media in 2009 with a blog about living in Norway and went on to lead social media for the EMEA region at SAP. She is now the CEO and founder of Tribal Impact, an award-winning niche social media agency that brings global B2B brands to life through digitally activating their employee voices on social media. It was born out of her belief that employees are more interesting than logos. With over 25 years' experience in B2B marketing, Sarah is also the mother of three school-age daughters, a sailing instructor, an avid reader, a marathon runner, and a new convert to yoga. Sarah says, "Change often brings uncertainty. It's unknown, risky, and unsettling. The unpredictability of not knowing what's ahead can even be scary. As an entrepreneur, survival is dependent on adapting and pivoting. It's about learning to get comfortable with change and realizing the opportunity that comes with it." Sarah Goodall, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Oh, thank you, Charlotte. I've been looking forward to this conversation. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you so much. I really love your quote about adapting and pivoting as an entrepreneur and getting comfortable with change. How have you learned that lesson?
Lots of mistakes. So it's, you have to get really comfortable with making mistakes. I'm not going to lie. And if anybody had told me that at the start of this journey, I don't think I'd have ever have taken the journey, because people just are naturally fearful of messing things up, getting things wrong, that whole, you know, experience of, oh, why did I do that? And why? But it is fear and doubt that stops you. And as an entrepreneur, you've just got to plow through, and you've just got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And as soon as you get hold of that idea, then actually you just go through things, and you have to just keep reflecting and remembering those experiences where you were so fearful, but you did it anyway. And then you're like, actually, I learned some of the best lessons in my entrepreneurial journey through those massive mistakes. That's okay.
So Tribal Impact is now nearly 10 years old. You have, I think, around 25 employees, and you recently received the much sought after Great Place to Work certification in the UK. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
Do you know, actually, yeah, I did. I always knew I wanted my own business and to work for myself, but I never knew what in. So I always thought that I would be my own boss at one point, but I just struggled. I didn't quite know what in. And so I just went through my career kind of thinking, how might this fill a skills gap that I have? How might I learn something from this that might help me in my future of having my own business? So I always knew that, but I was never quite sure of the business that I would build, until I was lucky enough to be given a great opportunity at SAP to explore social media when it was all new and exciting and nobody knew what to do with it. And then I started to have a light bulb moment, which you mentioned earlier, which was actually employees are way more interesting than logos. And even I was bored of the content I was putting out on the brand social media channels, but I was way more interested in what other people were sharing. And that's where I thought there's something in this. And that's when there was a voluntary redundancy program. And I just thought, I put my hand up and I thought, I'll never get this chance again. It's time to go. But it was a crazy time to choose to go. I had three children, 3 years and under. None of them were twins. I had three kids, one after the other. And my daughter was 8 weeks old when I left and set the business up. So it was a crazy idea. But I don't look back. I don't regret it.
I mean, that's an amazing story to start a business with three children under the age of three, honestly. Props to you. And now looking back, you know, on your business after 10 years and thinking of yourself as a CEO and a founder and a leader, how would you describe your leadership style?
Do you know, the thing is with, I think when you're an entrepreneur, you're always looking forward. You very rarely look back and you very rarely reflect. So it's moments like this that I love because it does give me an opportunity to pause. If I look at my leadership style, I'm very collaborative. I'm very trusting. I surround myself with great people who do amazing things. And, you know, I realize that the more you do that, your team actually do a far better job than you ever would do. And actually, it's just fantastic to share a journey with people who do that. So I would describe maybe my leadership style as quite trusting, quite collaborative. I like to share the excitement. I like to share the problems because I know that I have people around me that can help through that. Got an amazing team.
It's quite a big step, though, isn't it, from being a sole owner of a business to then building a team, learning how to delegate and empower others. Did you find that quite a big transition for yourself?
I did. And my first experience of team leadership was when I was about 29 in Hitachi. And I found myself in a role that I hadn't applied for, but I had a team suddenly looking at me saying, right, you're the only one here, so lead us. And I'm like, but I've never led a team. I don't know what to do. And then I left Hitachi for SAP and I decided I'm not doing team leadership anymore because I'm fearful of it. I'm not very good at it. I don't really enjoy it. And then I started Tribal. So I never set out for it to be any bigger than me. And it kind of just evolved and morphed by accident. And then about 5 years in, I thought, actually, this is really fun doing this with other people, not just me. And then it started to really dawn on me that I'm going to have to invest in learning about leadership and get good at this. And, you know, you have to. And, you know, it's not until recently that I've realized actually leadership starts with you and how you lead yourself. And then a lot of your team will pick up from not what you say, but how you behave. That's why it starts with you. So I'm definitely in a more comfortable place, but I've still got lots more to learn. Still got lots more to learn. And I've still got lots more mistakes to make. And that's okay. I'm okay with that.
I love what you say about leadership starting with you and that the fact that your team pick up on behaviors as much, if not more, than words. Because for me, that really goes down to reputation. So reputation is not just about the words you say. It's about the behaviors that you exhibit. And trust fails when there's a gap between the two. So, you know, I really love that insight from you. I saw an article that you posted quite recently about addressing diversity and challenges that people in your team have experienced. And you know that I'm very passionate about the topic of diversity and have reflected it in upcoming book, We Need New Leaders. But the article that you posted was really moving because you said, instead of bringing in somebody from the outside to train you all on unconscious bias and how to behave better, that as a team, you sat down and talked about your own diversities and your own experiences and how that really served to develop empathy for each other and each other's lived experiences. Could you talk more about that?
Oh, you know, actually, I've got goosebumps as you're reminding me of that. And it was quite life-changing for me personally with us doing that as a company. You live diversity. You don't learn it. You don't train it. I mean, obviously, you can train and there are courses you can take. But the best place it comes from is from within your organization, not for the sake of writing some content and da-da, look what we've done. This is what we're... No, it's about learning from the stories from the people you work alongside. And we had some quite incredible stories that really sit in my head, from unconscious bias with the names, naming, you know, not being allowed to go with your friends because of the color of your skin. You can't go into nightclubs. You have to split up into smaller groups. And then the other one, actually, which was life-changing for me, was one colleague said, I've never spoken about this before, but she said, I'm dyslexic. And she said, and no one's ever talked to me. That was life-changing for me because she brought that story up, it made me look at my younger daughter and go, you're struggling with some of the things that she mentioned. And then we got her diagnosed and she's dyslexic. It just changed everything for me. So I think, you know, bringing these stories to the workplace, having these conversations, but you've got to be in a psychologically safe environment to have those conversations because not everybody wants to do it. And there's no pressure on asking people. The another one was English, not my first language. So if you hear me pause on the phone, I'm not being rude. I'm just processing because English is not my first language. So let me process before I formulate my response. You don't have to fill a silence. You don't. And it was just things like that. And I just hadn't even considered it. So, yeah, it was one of the best things we did as a company.
Yeah, I think it's great that you say it needs to be taken in a psychologically safe environment because people need to know that their stories aren't going to go further or be attached to their names. If I think about your identity, Sarah, I know that, you know, our mother's generation, very few of them were CEOs. You are a female CEO, but you are also a parent of at least one child who's neurodivergent. And I also know that you've been through perimenopause or are going through it. Are these topics you comfortable talking about in the workplace?
Yeah, definitely. Because my experience with the perimenopause only came about because a colleague spoke to me about it. And they said, Sarah, you know, I'm recognizing symptoms in you that I have felt and that I think maybe you should go talk to a doctor. And it was because of that open conversation that massively changed my health, massively. And also, I think, you know, I have two other daughters who are autistic. So we're quite a neurodiverse household. But going through that whole process and learning about what autism is and neurodiversity personally has helped me have much more empathy and compassion in the workplace. What one person might say is, well, that's a bit rude. I'd be looking going, well, let's not jump to conclusions here. That might be just how they process things. That might be how they react. That might be, you know, there might be a lot going on there for that individual that you don't necessarily understand. So it's making me feel much more empathy for the conversations that I have rather than jumping to conclusions, which I might have done before I had this understanding. So yeah, this psychological safety is hugely important for these kind of conversations to happen. They don't happen without foundation, but it's personally helped me with my family, with my health, with my visibility of awareness of other people's situations. I'll never walk in their shoes, but I can be an ally for them.
Yes, and I think talking about topics that were previously taboo in the workplace, by breaking those taboos, we actually allow ourselves and your employees to show up as fully human, which means, I'm sure you see it as a leader, people give of themselves and do their best work.
Yeah, when they can show up authentically and bring their full selves to work. It was one of the highest scoring metrics in our Great Place to Work survey, actually. And it's probably the one I'm most proud of, because you can't create that kind of environment overnight. It takes time. It takes trust. That for me was, I was really proud of that, actually, because the bit that if people feel safe and can bring their whole selves to work, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. And you can't mandate it. You can't say, hey, guys, from today onwards, we're bringing our best selves to work, because people will just look at you and go, what's she on about? You have to engender and lead a culture that is safe, that is open, and where people feel empowered to behave in that way.
And I'm going to be honest here, because I have spent many years behaving like the leader that I think was expected of me. And so I've done over the last sort of 12 months, 18 months, a lot of reflection and soul searching, because leadership does start with you. And if you don't really understand who you are, how can you authentically show up? And, you know, but I have spent many years behaving like a leader that I thought I was supposed to be. And yeah, and it's not right. It's not comfortable, and it's not right, and it's not authentic. And actually, when you start to realize you can bring your authentic self to work, God, it just makes such a difference. And you just think, you don't have to put an act on. You don't have to pretend.
You exactly. Know, and one of my interviewees in We Need New Leaders said much the same thing. She said, as she's matured and grown as a leader, her work persona and her home persona have started to match. Yeah. And so it's just much less work, and it's a lot more fun.
It is. And the more I'm getting comfortable, because I will avoid a difficult conversation till the cows come home, but the more I'm doing that, the more I realise you have really good conversations, good, healthy, deep conversations with people on a different level. And that's actually part of growing, and that's okay. Yeah, so I spent many years pretending to be the leader that I thought was expected of me. I'm not going to lie, quite like the leader that I'm becoming and learning to be. So
that's such a beautiful realization. And, you know, there's no blame on you for having that leadership archetype in your head, because we all have it. You know, culture and society has shown us since we were children what leadership looks like, a very specific archetype. But what you're doing is you're living your leadership change out loud, which is really rather beautiful.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it before. That's why I said these kind of conversations are quite therapeutic. But I always talk to my coach about, you know, I'd love to have a coat that fits, you know, put on a coat that fits me, not one that's too big or one that's too small that I can't. You know, if you put in a visual representation around it, it is that kind of, it fits. And I'm not there yet. You're always work in progress. You've always got development to do. I'm a big believer in that. But I like the path that I'm on and the journey. It feels good.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, Sarah, a slight shift now. I think that part of the training that Tribal offers clients is a resume to reputation course. Now, of course, you know I'm passionate about reputation, but I'd love to hear more about the content of that and what you're teaching your clients about in terms of reputation.
Yeah, so this mainly is a lot of work that we do with executives, that how they show up digitally in their role. Because quite often, you know, when they walk the floors and they're very authentic, they get into those roles because they have strong leadership. But how do you replicate that? How do you put that out as a digital reputation? Can be quite difficult for a lot of executives and very uncomfortable. But we live in a hybrid working world. Walking the floors is no longer a thing, because when you walk the floors, half the office are not there that day. We've moved very much to a remote working organization. So you do have to show up your reputation digitally and share what you believe in, what you care about, without just standing in front of town halls. So yeah, we do a lot of that. And a lot of that is around exploring what the executive cares about, what's deep within them, their values, what they want to talk about, how they are as a leader in person. And then our role is to support them in replicating that in a digital way. And part of that is we build a very good content strategy for them. So because quite a lot of executives will just show up as an extension of the PR channel, and that is not authentic leadership. That is not the way to do it. But we look at their LinkedIn strategy as a way of how do we balance the content so we can get a bit of you, the company leader, the personal leader, and then you in your role and what you do. So there's a good balance of content that supports their rounded digital reputation rather than just becoming an extension of press releases, which is not what employees want. It's not what customers want to see. It's not what your future employees want to see. So these are all of the reasons that we do that.
A wonderful insight for me that hybrid or digital work is changing how executives and leaders need to show up. Mm-hmm. And the personality that comes out when you lead by walking around is completely lost if you lead only by town halls and emails and press releases. So it's how do you capture that persona and that personality and that human charm in a digital way so that you show up for, as you say, current and future employees, but also customers, investors, and other stakeholders.
And it's a fine balance, and it's not as easy as reposting the latest press release or come to this event. It's just not, you're in a role where you need to inspire not only your existing employees, but your future employees and have conversations and engage and be part of the conversation. And this is where you get innovation from. This is where you drive innovation, ideas, get customer feedback. If you're not on the socials as an executive, you're missing a massive opportunity that maybe competitors are filling. So yeah, it is hugely important, but it's way more than showing up and posting press releases. You're in a too strategic role for that. You can't do that.
And how do you advise clients who say, oh, but I hate self-promotion. I feel so uncomfortable with being on social media. What's your response to that?
Yeah, and we do. We do get that. And it's what's really interesting is when you bring it back to the business outcome and why they're in this. This is not about you. And in the nicest possible way, we're not going to be self-promoting you. This is about shining a light on your teams, on your customers, on the great work the company does. We're not really going to be talking. Now and again, we might talk a little bit about you, but it will be in the greater context of the business and the greater good of the business. It's brilliant because I was looking at I was working with an executive the other day, and we looked at the impact of one of their posts. And I scrolled down and I'm like, look at this. You know, several employees have reposted this, sales employees. You're creating content that helps your sales teams to open doors. Oh, look, several analysts engaged with this. Your content is getting in front of the analyst community and the influencer community. And look, your team engaged with this. Your team's giving you a high five here. They're seeing what you're doing. They're waiting for you to turn up. And for me, this is when the light bulb goes and they're like, this isn't about me self-promoting myself, is it? No, it's not. You're helping the business grow, and this is how you're doing it.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So Sarah, as CEO, you are both custodian of the Tribal Impact reputation, but you also have your own reputation to think about. And how do you kind of manage tension or friction between those? Do you see them as one reputation? What are your thoughts on that?
To start with, it was one reputation. So it's definitely I was tribal was me. But as we've evolved and grown, my brand has stepped to one side. So, and now I'm fortunate enough that we have our own marketing team. They manage the reputation and the voice of the tribal brand, and they do a great job of it. And I love the quirkiness and how they do that. Whereas my reputation is quite separate but connected. So I'm looking for future. I've got my own passions around neurodiversity, just based on my family and experience. I've got other things that I care about. So in a way, whilst I'm connected, I am no longer the tribal brand. I am Sarah. And so there's not conflict, although I do think the marketing team I'm sure they're laughing going, yeah, Sarah, you just go off on one and don't tell us. And so we could be better aligned. Let's just say that. But I get passionate and I write blogs and I see things and I'm like, yeah, that we should share that. So I just could perhaps be a bit more aligned than I am.
And what elements of your own reputation matter the most to you?
Wow, that's a good question. I love learning, growing, self-growth. So I do value that a lot. And I've never got all the answers. I'm always on a learning journey. So that matters to me. Also, fairness, and I value that, you know, and ethics. And I think that comes with living in Norway for 5 years, where society is very much around, you know, fairness across all professions. There's, you know, no one stands out. So I think I value that. Trustworthiness as well, I think, for me. I'm a very trusting person. So that's a default for me. So I do value that. So I think, yeah, they're probably the things I'd think about with my reputation. That I do also have a passion for seeing the potential in people that don't see it in themselves. We've got all kinds of people working in our organisation that come from all kinds of backgrounds. And I believe if you can get the right spirit, you can train the rest. You can absolutely train the rest. But some people get a bit, oh, I can't do it. It's like, yeah, you can do it. I know you can do it. I believe in you, but I know nothing about this. Don't worry about that. I can train you that bit. That comes from a place of, I never did very well at school. So I always joke with my kids that I took French, failed, took another year of French and managed to fail it again. That's how bad I am. I'm just really bad. And they love that story. But the point is that if you find something you're good at and you lean into it, that I really, really believe that everybody has it within them. They have it in them. They just need to sometimes, somewhere along the line at school, we get it knocked out of us that we have to fit in and comply. And it's like, no, you don't. No, you don't. You can be whatever you want to be.
It's often a pivotal moment in someone's career when a leader sees something in them that they don't see in themselves and challenges them to try something new. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I think I'm lucky because it happened to me early in my career. It happened to me in my gap year of university, which, by the way, I just scraped into university. But then I managed to find a course that I loved, and that was everything for me. But in my gap year, I remember I had the best manager, and he gave me the opportunities to try different things. And I'm like, but I've never designed a product before. What, in real life? Like, that I've done this like fake for an assignment, but never in... He goes, yeah, go on. Now do the product photography. Now write the press release. But I've never done this before. Have a go. And that's where I realized that, you know, you can have a go at all sorts of things. You don't realize that you don't have a ceiling until you keep hitting it and pushing it up. And then you think, oh, actually, maybe we'll see what happens and see where we can take this.
I'm going to save that, hitting the ceiling and then pushing it up, because, you know, the glass ceiling is such a kind of typical and quite tired and boring metaphor now. But, yeah. You know, when I'm thinking of all these diverse leaders who I'm personally trying to inspire, both with We Need New Leaders and with this podcast, I'm just going to keep thinking about that metaphor of hit the ceiling and then push it up. Yeah. it's a wonderful concept.
Because we put those ceilings on ourselves, right? We just learn it somewhere along the line that it's like, oh, well, I can only do this and it was within my role. But it's, you know, I think starting a business and being an entrepreneur has realized that actually anything is possible, you know, and you don't realize until you have the freedom to try, break mistakes. And then you think, actually, the sky is truly the limit. There are no ceilings anymore. Just keep going and see what happens.
Lovely. What do you think we can do both collectively and individually to change those old leadership archetypes that you already are changing?
First, you have to look to your own leadership. So you have to, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but lead by example is the biggest thing that you can do that you can't really measure. But I think by investing in yourself, by leading by example, I think is one of the key things that you can do. And the second thing, I think, is being an ally for others and lifting each other up and spotting things that are not right, or putting, you know, like the neurodiversity perspective, sharing that with others, it's like they might not be rude. They might actually just be processing things differently, you know, and just share those stories, I think, is the key thing. Because it could be your opinion, but actually if you say, but yeah, I did that once and I thought maybe I should have thought of it a different way because actually now I've learned about it, it's given me a different perspective. So sharing stories, I think, is a really good way of sharing your experience and learnings in a better way than saying, well, this is what I think. I think it's just a more constructive and collaborative way.
So what I'm hearing you saying, and it takes me back to the quote at the beginning, your quote, is that the change that we want might be uncomfortable, but out of the change comes amazing opportunities that at this point we can't even imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes we tie ourselves up trying to imagine the opportunities when actually you should just like focus more on where you're at and exploring those and be open to those opportunities and just go with them.
Oh, it's been lovely, Sarah. Now, I've got three standard questions that I always ask my guests. Give us a book recommendation.
I've got a great book recommendation and I'm going to show it to you, not that your readers or listeners can see it, but Leadership Mindset 2.0.
Oh, yeah, that is a very battered copy that Sarah's holding up right now. It's got coffee stains on it and a lot of post-its and some folded down corners.
Yeah, it's very well used, easy to read. It's by Michael Anderson. It's changed everything for me. I wish I had that book 20 years ago, but it wasn't written 20 years ago. But easy to read chapters. It takes you on a journey of self-reflection, self-limiting beliefs. It looks at handling difficult conversations. It helps you explore who you are as a leader. And it constantly says in that book, your leadership is a reflection of the relationship with yourself. So everything I'm telling you today basically is because I've gone through this process. It has quite literally been life-changing. So brilliant book.
So that's the Leadership Mindset 2.0 by Michael Anderson. Thank you for that recommendation. You know that my passion is to help emerging leaders from diverse backgrounds and of different diversities keep or create their dream leadership roles. What three tips do you have for people who are just starting out in their career with leadership ambitions?
I think the first tip I would say would be to really reflect on the gaps that you have. So you're going to have to do a bit of self-reflection and look at where you're okay, but where you could grow. The next thing I'd say is have a look at people, surround yourself with people that help you strengthen and close the gap. I've had some amazing, amazing people throughout my entire career, not just tribal. No way I would be here without them by my side. I've got amazing people who support me and hold me up. And then the final tip I'd say is be curious. It's okay to ask questions and ask for help and show that you're not understanding. Stop. Don't think being a leader means you have all the answers. Totally does not mean that. Being a leader means you surround yourself with people who are far better at doing stuff than you are. And you're constantly learning and being curious and asking them questions. You do not have to have all the answers. And that is such a leadership misconception. And it's wrong. So is in my opinion.
So your three tips are know and understand yourself really well, surround yourself with great people, and be curious and don't be afraid to ask stupid questions because there aren't any stupid questions.
Nope.
None at all.
Yep, they're my tips.
And Sarah, last question. What brings you joy?
I have a few things that bring me joy. My cup of coffee in the morning. I love that cup of coffee. I love little things, the birds, watching the birds, watching the blue skies. I do try to practice gratitude for every moment of joy that other people don't get. So, but then there are bigger things that bring me an awful lot of joy, which is seeing my girls, listening to my conversations at the dinner table and listening to my calls and listening to my, and then now and again, I see something from them. It's like, yeah. That's it, you go. That's it. You know, where they're getting quite principled about things that they believe in, and they're building value systems. That gives me joy.
What a lovely place to end. Sarah Goodall, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.